Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. My name's Andrew Popel, and every week I introduce a new great conversation, and these are conversations with Australian authors because here at Final Draft, that's what we're about. I want to share great Australian stories. Sometimes, though, it's important to stop and just look at where we've come from, because Final Draft, the Great Conversations podcast, is having its third birthday. Along with that, Final Draft, the radio program from 2SER, is approaching its 30th birthday. So today, we're going to have a little bit of a look back, because we are all about books, writing, and literary culture, and I want to explore that culture and how it's changed. I'm Andrew Popel. Look, I do broadcast Final Draft every week from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Now, I'm recording on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people, and I want to acknowledge those traditional owners of the lands where we work, where we broadcast from, unceded lands. I want to pay my respects to the traditional owners' ongoing connection to their lands. And as I said, it's you know, all of these anniversaries coming together, 30 years for Final Draft is coming up. It's 8 years. I'm celebrating 8 years on the show myself and 3 years since we launched the podcast. And in that time, so much has changed. And that's what I wanted to share with you today. We're going right back to the very first episode of the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. But as I listened back to this interview, I realized I've learned so much the way I interview, even just my ability to record decent audio. So join me today. I've got a conversation that I had. Well, I've got two conversations that I had with Bram Presser. I have reworked the audio. I have had a bit of a look at it for you and listened back. And I really want to share it with you. And if you're enjoying this, if you are enjoying the podcast, maybe share it with a friend, because we're 3 years in and there is still so many more books to discover. So join me today as we go back and celebrate our first podcast episode with Bram Presser discussing The Book of Dirt. Bram, welcome to the show. I thoroughly enjoyed The Book of Dirt, and I really I'm excited to be talking to you about it.
Oh, thanks, Andrew. Excited to be here.
The Book of Dirt unfolds the story of your grandfather, Jacob Rand, moving to Prague from the country, and on the cusp of establishing his life, the city is occupied by the invading Nazi army. And your grandparents' experience in their survival of war was not something that I got the sense that you fully understood growing up.
No. So, I mean, they never spoke about it, right? So there was essentially two types of survivors, those who were willing to talk and those who weren't. You know, pretty typical response to trauma, but they never told their stories. They sort of let this myth of what had happened grow around them, and it was that he was a teacher in Prague. Then when he went to Theresienstadt, he taught Jewish kids there, and then in Auschwitz as well. And my grandmother, who you know, she was this incredible just powerhouse of a woman, and who we once saw carrying a fridge through the back garden. Her story was that she laid rail sleeper tracks for the trains that would bring the Jews into the camps. And that was pretty much all we knew, and we just accepted it. They never confirmed or denied it. And then they died in 1996, about 6 weeks apart from one another.
Yeah.
And about 3 years after they had died, an article was published purporting to tell my grandfather's story. And that story was that he was, in fact, the literary curator of Hitler's Museum of the Forgotten, of the Extinct Race. And I was blown away. And so I needed to know the story. So I set off on trying to find what his story was. And that led me to her story as well. And the story of my great grandmother, her mother, who, to me was probably the hero of the book, actually. It was just this incredible experience of tracking down these scraps and fragments and photos and records, and you know, none of which was told a complete story, and engaging with them trying to imagine their experience.
Yeah, The Book of Dirt, it's really two stories. We have your grandfather's, his journey to Prague, his survival of the war, and the very beginnings of what is your extended family, you here today. But there's also your story, searching out the links and the evidence of this past. When did you know that you would become a character in your book?
The answer is I never did. I was writing my experience just to document it, just so that I would have for myself, really, an idea of where I had been, what I had done, and because there were some pretty, you know, strange encounters along the way, and I wanted them documented. And also, I was never actually sure what the book was going to be. I didn't know. Firstly, I didn't know whether it'd be a book. Secondly, I didn't know whether it would just be, you know, a quest narrative of a grandson trying to find his grandparents' story, or whether it was going to be a reimagination of their stories, which became much more, a focus of the book when it became apparent that every single door that I found into their lives was just slamming shut in my face. So, you know, I turned to the fiction side and trying to kind of inhabit their lives that way and understand their experience that way from the fragments that I could kind of piece together. And at that point, I actually thought that my story was completely irrelevant then. And then I actually realized that really the story is the interplay between my search and my reimagining of their stories.
That unfolding is so essential, and it was so essential to my reading. It's interesting. I mean, look, your grandfather or your grandparents' story is compelling, but it's really the way it plays against your attempt to discover it that brings so much resonance. And, of course, this is a work of historical fiction.
Yeah.
It's your family, though, and their lives that populate the novel. How essential was it that you could inhabit that space, but then also create? Did you feel free to realize the action, or did you feel bound by expectation?
I was almost, I suppose, energized by having a document of my search to find the stories where I could sow the seeds for what I could then explore in a bit more kind of depth on a human level in the fictional side. Yeah, and so I was able to I suppose also take parts of particularly of the anecdotes I was told by people who knew them before the war, or my cousin in Prague who had heard some stories from my great grandmother and what have you. There were bits of the story that I wouldn't really be able to work into the quest narrative, but they actually were incredible stories. So, like one just offhand is that my grandmother was sending letters back from the concentration camps to her mother in Prague. Her mother not being Jewish, and one of them was intercepted in Auschwitz, and an SS commander brought her in front of the roll call and made a girl who was just selected out of the crowd read the letter, and the letter she basically this girl who didn't know my grandmother basically lied about what the letter said to save my grandmother's life. And so little stories like that I wanted in the book, but they didn't really fit the quest narrative. So I had this great, I don't know, abundance of little legends and scraps that made the fictional narrative for me really interesting to write, and also gave me essentially waypoints that I could peg along with the quest narrative so that they kind of worked in tandem.
Yeah, and that scene was particularly moving in the book, that story that you just related. And you had me thinking the whole time about this need to tell stories, to remember and tell them, both as personal history, but also the role that they play to inspire and give hope. And this emerges as themes throughout the Book of Dirt. But I wonder, for you, in your quest, but also, I guess, your family and their experience of this story, how important it is to reconstruct and flesh out a narrative from the records of the past. I mean, you were incredibly frustrated in your search to find true record.
Yeah. I mean, look, the reality is that they're, for the vast majority of the time, I spent 8 years writing this, and for the vast majority of that time, I could find nothing. And I was well into the fictional narrative when a whole lot of things just opened up. I got an email from a 94-year-old guy in London who had happened to be my grandfather's student during the occupation, and he'd heard about my quest, and he wanted to get in touch because he's been spending, since his retirement, his life trying to piece together what happened to all of the students in his class photo, which is in the book. And the only person he couldn't find records of was my grandfather. So, so I had kind of things like that. I think, you know, the other thing that was really kind of important to me is I actually kind of and it sounds almost trite, but I sort of liked bringing them back. Mm. I felt that, you know, I could hang out with them again. Like, I was incredibly close with my grandparents. Mm. And I feel sort of half guilty in the sense that I was able to bring them back in my mind and then put them through incredible trauma. And that was actually incredible. That was really difficult to do. But at the same time, I felt this incredible need to just know them. Having now understood that I really didn't know them, even though I was close with them. It's a very strange feeling having, you know, people you love die, feeling that you've been very close with them and later finding out that you literally knew nothing about their lives. Mm. And so for me, the book was a means of finally knowing these people I loved.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you evoked that there. I was actually having a conversation this morning with one of your text, do we say stablemates, when you're in a publishing house together, Stuart Kells, and his book, The Library, has just been released.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I felt the need to talk about your book in relation to that, but we both...
Now we're even.
Yeah, but he was talking particularly about how in a digital world we have this threat or promise that we're going to be able to encode ourselves and come to life in computers, but that books have been doing this for as long as there has been print, that we encode not just characters but pieces of the author and parts of the history. And it felt like what you were evoking there, that in some way your grandparents are in this book, and that part of their story that you had to discover is in this book.
Yes, I think so. Like, look, you know, at the end of the day, when you write, you are, you know, you're creating, and this is also why the dirt as as the metaphor also worked very strongly or resonated very strongly with me. You know, you are creating, you're creating them from the clay of words, you know, and you know, the Gollum story is very, very, important in the book as well. Mm. And so, you know, you build them from clay, you breathe life into them with words. And it is true. Like, it is, I want to leave a lasting document of their existence. And you know, I want to know that they will live on beyond me. It's just, I don't know whether it's a, you know, a kind of a grandson's, I don't know, feeling of, I don't know, there's a gratitude to it of, you know, what they endured so that I actually exist. Right. Yeah. And I feel that I owe it to them to ensure that their existence isn't forgotten.
You just mentioned there, and your treatment of the Gollum story really, really interested me in the way you sort of brought it into the Book of Dirt. And this is probably out of my own curiosity as much as anything, but as you were realizing that part of your grandfather's experience in, am I pronouncing this right, Theresienstadt. And you brought the Gollum story into the Book of Dirt. Did you feel like you were skirting around the edges of magical realism type writing?
Very, very much so. And it was actually a conscious decision for a couple of reasons. Firstly, like, for me, like, I love fables. I love magical realism. It's actually my favorite form. Mm. Right? But secondly, I also wanted to make it incredibly clear that this was a novel, that I wasn't claiming to be telling their actual stories as if it were fact. Right. And so I thought that, you know, I had this double opportunity. One to actually enjoy writing in a form that I love. Right. But also to, make it very, very clear that I wasn't an imposter trying to pass off some sort of, you know, made up story as fact.
It struck me though that there was a very real sense as you'd evoked this world for me, that the magical realism was there, but that the interpretation that was put on those events in the story, and I'm really skirting hard around spoilers here because it's a wonderful thing to have emerge in the book. It was also a very natural response to this horrific, unnatural situation. It's a miracle anyone survived.
Absolutely.
And that an individual could put some sort of supernatural interpretation on any event seems entirely natural to me in the circumstances.
Well, I think also that, like, you know, what what I was also trying to do, I suppose, with the magical realism is I never actually give the answer of whether or not the golem's there. You know, I wanted to keep it. It was almost, it's a strange pop cultural reference, but to me, it was the suitcase in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Where, you know, they open it up, it's got the glow, but you never know what's in there. You never know, you know, the reality of it, whether it is something great, whether it's whatever, something that, you know, a light. And so with the golem, in this, I didn't want it to become a fully magical realist story, but I wanted the possibility where the reader engages with it and thinks, yeah, you know, this the magical side of it could actually be the correct interpretation. And I think, and it's exactly as you said, and as a survivor kind of said to me, survival was impossible. Like survival, the fact that people survived defies logic. And so therefore, to add a magical realist element to it almost seems natural.
One of the, probably the most compelling part of the Book of Dirt is this idea of a museum of the extinct race that your grandfather was, I guess, sort of press ganged into working as a part of. It's macabre and horrific, but it seemed like this macabre and horrific corruption of exactly what you and so many people do when they seek to tell stories of family and culture. But the Museum of Extinct Race removes agency from the storyteller and seeks to reduce them to some sort of exhibit and erasing them from history in that way. What were your feelings, though, exploring this idea and the historical reality of it?
Well, I've not thought of like that. That's actually really quite fascinating to me. I had heard about this idea of a museum of the extinct race, and the idea being that the Nazis were going to collect a whole lot of artifacts that they planned on displaying in this museum centered in Prague after they had finished their job of decimating and completely annihilating the European Jewish population. I'd heard about that since I was a kid, and you know, I'd been to Prague quite a lot of times. I've actually got quite a lot of family still there, and you know, you hear it there. It's part of Czech Jewish history, and it was for me kind of thinking that my grandfather was part of it was really it was mind blowing, and it was kind of scary. And it sounds wrong, but you also kind of think that there's almost an you know, there's an honor to it as well, like, you know, that he should be someone who's viewed so highly that he's selected to become, you know, one of the people putting this museum together. But at the same time, like, I knew that there actually is no documentary evidence of this plan to make a museum of the extinct race. So a lot of it was also me, I suppose, exploring and the question of whether it was real. And you know, without going into spoilers, the answer is yes and no. Right? What my grandfather was involved in was something akin to that idea, but the central idea is itself a creation post-war. So, you know, it just the layers of creation that kind of go into memory, into building life stories are just incredible. Like, and it's amazing what does get kind of taken on as real, and accepted. And this is, you know, it's actually a really, really fraught area because, you know, as soon as there's a small detail that people that you say might not have been right, people then start kind of jumping on larger bandwagons, which are a lot more problematic, to do with Holocaust denial and what have you. And I think this is, for me, one of the central questions of the book is, you know, what is the role of the writer after the survivors are gone? Do we have business telling the story? Or should we just be pointing people to, you know, Elie Wiesel or Primo Levi or writers like that who were there and can actually tell exactly what happened? And I think part of my, you know, ultimate kind of solution, I shouldn't actually use that term, the ultimate decision was that the Holocaust is beyond a doubt an absolute fact. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't start looking into the taboos, looking into the finer details, because it has been turned into this monolith of horror.
Mm.
And there are, I suppose, narrative templates that go with Holocaust stories. And we're now in a position to explore it more deeply. And I actually think you end up coming out with a lot more extraordinary stories. Mm. When you, subject some of the templates to a bit more scrutiny, because while, you know, survivor stories do generally fit templates, it's only because people who, you know, seek to tell them afterwards are kind of a bit lazy. They don't bother really, revealing the intricacies and the idiosyncrasies of Holocaust survival. And again, as a survivor said to me, you know, we all endured our own Auschwitz, and it's true. You know, these are incredibly individual stories, and they're getting lost, you know, kind of in this swamp of templates.
Mm, it's a strange perversion of, it's sort of a fact of our neurobiology. I studied a little bit at university. The idea that narrative templates are a part of our way of realizing reality, but it, as you say, it has this sense of erasure when you try and fit every story into a mold.
Exactly. And the thing is that, like, had I just gone with, okay, so my grandparents' stories were this, I'm not going to really look that deeply into them, I actually wouldn't have found, you know, two stories that are, to my mind, far more extraordinary than the basic templates that I had going into it. But I think you're right. Like, at the end of the day, people, it's easy to just think on, you know, accepted lines and just, and I guess, you know, smooth out the edges and what have you, because otherwise you'd go mad considering every detail of every particular story.
Mm. And so the Book of Dirt was released in late August. It feels sort of strange to be discussing your novel of the Second World War only weeks after images of Nazis actually flooded, or people wearing the iconography flood our news. The specter of fascism seems ever present. Are you surprised that your book has emerged in an environment that seems kind of poised to echo the world that your grandparents grew up in?
Well, I mean, that to me is just like such a strange kind of moment in time to be, as you said, like releasing the book. Like, I remember my grandfather saying, being concerned about kind of the increase of just, you know, right wing general kind of chatter, for want of a better term, mm-hmm. and the beginnings of, you know, neo-Nazism and what have you, and like to see it now in really, you know, in Western democracies, where, because, you know, everyone always said, oh, you know, the thing with Germany, the reason it was so surprising, the Holocaust, is Germany was, you know, a refined, Western, you know, sophisticated country. And so, you know, that it happened there is incredibly scary. And now I'm seeing it, you know, the rise of this extreme right in countries that to me are similar to what Germany was. And it is frightening, it does seem incredibly timely to have a book that addresses it, that looks at it, that actually challenges it and hopefully highlights the horrific places it can lead to. But at the same time, it's kind of scary because I'm looking at what's happening and I'm looking at what I've written, and the parallels are really astounding.
I'm speaking with Bram Presser. His novel is The Book of Dirt. You might have gotten the sense from our conversation that this is an absolutely fantastic book that it's really hard to encapsulate in such a short conversation, so I suggest you get out and read it yourself. Bram, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this conversation with Bram Presser. You are on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. That was my first conversation with Bram Presser about his incredible debut, The Book of Dirt. It was also the very first episode of the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Bram and I have spoken many times since then, and I want to share another conversation that we had around the time that The Book of Dirt was absolutely just kicking all of the goals. So here is Bram and I catching up around some of just the huge success that he's enjoyed with The Book of Dirt.
My name's Andrew Popel, and I'm joined on the line right now by an author who is possibly the busiest author in Sydney at the moment, and that is with a whole slew of writers running around for Sydney Writers Festival this weekend. Bram Presser is in Sydney for the Writers Festival, and on Monday night, he absolutely cleaned up at the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards. His book, The Book of Dirt, took out the People's Choice Award, the Glenda Adams Prize for New Writing, and the Christina Stead Prize for Fiction. If he'd bought a raffle ticket, he would have won the door prize too. Such was his fortune on the night. Congratulations, Bram.
Thanks. I wish there was door prizes.
The Book of Dirt explores the history of your grandfather, Jacob Rand, as he moves to Prague on the eve of the Nazi occupation of that city. And this story is folded into your own search for traces and records of your family's life. And much of this was potentially lost or obscured. It was quite an epic journey you took for this. Now, this book's been so incredibly received, and there's a lot of people talking about you at the moment, Bram. I'm loving all the attempts to encapsulate you in a byline. There's writer, author, criminal lawyer, punk rocker.
Stay at home dad was another one.
Stay at home dad. Oh, how did I miss that one? But is there any one title that you're more or less comfortable with these days? All these people talking.
No, look, whatever anyone wants to call me, I'm happy with you. I've been called many worse things, so any of these things which are vaguely positive, I relish.
The Book of Dirt is this intensely personal narrative. It took you 8 years to complete. Knowing that it's been shared and loved so widely, I mean, the People's Choice Award is huge. That's a huge vote from your readers. Do you have any new perspectives on the book and on your work?
It's weird. Like, I'm still actually trying to process it. Like, it's so, like, look, the book's been well received, you know, the reviews have been good, it sold quite well, but like Monday night kind of blew me away. I think you don't ever expect that happens to other people's books, you know, and like, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are writers, and some of them have won some great prizes. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome, you know, like. I've read some friends' books who are eligible for prizes next year, ones that have come out in the last few months, and I'm just like, oh, that's definitely a prize, but you never think it's yours, you know. And so I don't know, like I'm still just like I kind of giggle with glee when I just hear someone has read the book. You know what I mean? Like I just can't. I'm amazed that you know, and incredibly grateful that someone would take the time out of their busy lives to firstly read a book. And of the billions of books that you could read, like when you walk into your local bookstore, the one you chose was mine. I still find that quite amazing, really.
Has anyone come to you to talk to you about your quest with their own quest that I guess has brought perspective or just surprised you?
Look, a lot of people actually do come up and discuss their own searches and their own kind of family history. Some of which have actually been astounding, and I do like that mine has caused people to think about their own and to discuss their own, and actually even to consider writing their own. I think that's actually quite a humbling thought that I was able to, or I might have been able to. You know, maybe inspire someone to really look into their history.
I was talking to the Israeli author Nir Baram a couple of years ago around his the release of his book Good People, and he sort of wryly observed that there are probably as many stories or books and stories written about the Second World War and the experiences surrounding that as there were, you know, days that conflict lasted. And it's amazing to think that there are still so many more stories to be told and so many things to...
Well, that's the amazing thing to me. Like, I quite early on in the piece with Book of Dirt, when I started working with text, I said to Penny, my editor, you know, like, if I'm just writing another Holocaust story, tell me to stop. Because I think this is, it's very, like, whilst it's important to document all the history and, like, every family story is really important, like, a lot of them are you know, riffs on a theme. And I think that the books that are coming out now really have to be saying something new because there are so many great books that already exist, and particularly ones by survivors. You know, I can imagine all I want, but I want them there.
Right. Now, when we last spoke for Final Draft, the Book of Dirt had just come out, and in this sort of really bizarre way, our news feeds were also being flooded with these visions of neo-Nazis in America marching with tiki torches. It was macabre. Now, especially given we were talking about the Holocaust and the way the Book of Dirt's exploration of your family's experience there. Now, in the time since, we've seen people's movements gaining traction and conservatism maybe being countered in some way. Do you have any perspectives? Do you feel like maybe as a world we're moving in a better direction, sort of some 12 months on?
I wish I could say that. I think there are pockets that you know, kind of give me hope, but wow, there's a lot of really scary shifts to the right. And I just see it, like I see it in Australia, and that scares the you know, the living hell out of me, just because I think that, you know, I always remember, speak to any actually Czech as well as German Jews, and they're just like, well, what? And then you say, you know, why didn't you leave? Well, you know, because this is Germany, or this is, you know, Czechoslovakia. This is a highly cultured, you know, very progressively thinking country. This was never going to happen, right? And I just think that could be any country. And as we see these kind of, you know, I guess, you know, fascist movements gaining traction, I just wonder at what point we're going to be able to actually really, like, put our foot down and stop them and be able to say that is not what, you know, a modern liberal democracy, small l, is supposed to be. And this is, you know, we're better than that, and, you know, we've seen the past. And not like, you know, after the Holocaust there was the you know, the big call of never again. Never again is meaningless because never again happened again and again and again, like Rwanda, the former Yugoslavia, the killing fields. There are so many. But, you know, I think we have to constantly strive.
Well, so here we are, sort of 8, I guess 9 years on since your journey began. I saw on Twitter the other day that difficult sophomore album book, it's not really on your horizon at the moment, despite a wealth of fans' anticipation. But I wonder, I'm not going to commit you to a book, but are there any topics that...
That was a bit of a flippant comment on Twitter. There are actually 2 books in the work, one of which is, in form at least, similar to Book of Dirt, in that kind of blending of fact and fiction using documentary stuff, but it's not about the Holocaust, thankfully.
Please tell me it's about the Melbourne Passing.
My family happens to be Australian, and they actually have and American, and they actually have a very interesting story that I want to investigate. And then I have another one that's straight kind of... I don't really know how to describe it yet. It's still taking form, but it's kind of a bit of a fable, a bit magical realist, but still very much grounded.
Breaking news on Final Draft. We've got some scoop on Bram's follow up. You broke my heart a little bit that it's not going to be a blend of fiction and narrative around the Melbourne punk rock scene, but I'll take.
Yeah, weirdly, you're not the first person that should be writing memoirs, kind of a memoir thing of the music days. All I can say about that is there are too many people who would be very upset with me that I'm still very good friends with if I aired all of their skeletons, not the least myself.
Death in Brunswick updated.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
I'm speaking with Bram Presser. He's the author of The Book of Dirt, which won just about all the things at the New South Wales Premier's literary prize this week. Bram, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
I've
caught you running around, so I will let you get back to you.
You have, but I love Final Draft, and you were one of the early ones that I spoke with, and we had an absolutely great chat. And again, anytime you want me, I am there for you.
And you are welcome back anytime when both of those books you've just mentioned are ready for the world.
See you in a decade.
Thanks, mate.
All right, now that's really it for today's Great Conversations. We featured Bram Presser. He is an absolute champion of a guy. He is a fantastic writer. He was the first on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, but there are still so many more. You can discover the Book of Dirt. It's out through Text Publishing. I want to let you know that Great Conversations is recorded on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. Back when we started, it was recorded on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. And we always want to pay our respects to the traditional owners of those lands, unceded lands, and acknowledge that paying our respects, knowing the land you live on, is just the beginning. This conversation needs to be ongoing. We need to support the storytelling of First Nations people to help affect real change. Now, the show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. I do want you to stay in touch. Tell me, maybe reach out. What have you been enjoying on the show? Have you discovered a book that has gone on to become a favorite? Is there something that you think we've missed that you would love to hear us talk about? Stay in touch. You can do that through at Final Draft 2SER on all of the social networks. I am Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more great conversations from Final Draft. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for staying with me over 3 years. And I'm looking forward to many, many more. See you later.